You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Kent, we're getting your reaction to U.S. Senator Kamala Harris being picked as running mate to presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden. They hosted their first campaign event together yesterday in Delaware. Here's Harris.
I devoted my life to making real the words carved in the United States Supreme Court, equal justice under law. And 30 years ago, I stood before a judge for the first time, breathed deep, and uttered the phrase that would truly guide my career and the rest of my career. Kamala Harris for the people.
What is your reaction to Biden's pick? What do you think of Harris being the first Black and South Asian American woman to run on a major political party's ticket? We're at 800-642-1234. Wendy Scattergood is an assistant professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Wendy, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, what do you make of Biden's pick here? What do you think Harris brings to the ticket?
Well, I think, first of all, it's kind of amazing that we're talking about a Black and South Asian female candidate as being the safe pick, but that's certainly what pretty much all the pundits are saying, that it was kind of a safe pick in that matter. She brings a lot of name recognition. She, very early on in the primary, she was one of the earlier ones to declare a presidency and really took off right from the very beginning. She's won a statewide race in a very large state, very diverse state. So she brings a lot of campaign savvy, a network to be able to do some fundraising. And also, I think, as Joe Biden said himself over and over again, he wanted somebody who he felt like was, as in his words, simpatico with him. And so I think in a lot of ways, it's not that surprising. I think a lot of the people who dig deep into particularly how Democrats pick their VP candidates, that she was one of the ones that was going to be picked.
Yeah, but on the campaign trail, before she dropped out, they were less than simpatico. I mean, they were rivals, and yet, you know, that's what happens when you're vying there on the campaign trail. How do you approach that? What do you think of that?
Yeah, well, I think first of all, I mean, Joe Biden's been in politics for, 48 years? And, I mean, he knows the drill and how this works. He's run for president before. And, you know, that's what a primary season is about. It's to, you've got to, especially when you've got this massive slate of Democratic hopefuls, how are you going to make yourself stand out in those debates that were very chaotic and you got only a few seconds to try to make yourself shine? And so in that way, I think Joe Biden really gets that's just part of how politics in the primary season actually works. And as we saw in his little notes he made to himself, that he doesn't hold grudges. And I think there's a story about them sort of weirdly meeting at an airport during Kamala's husband's birthday party, and they kind of went off and talked about stuff and kind of cleared the air between them. But it's so, yeah.
Wendy, you know, Harris is a former California Attorney General and District Attorney. And as we heard there in her words in the opening, she started cracking up when, you know, she talked about the first time she was in front of a judge. What do you think her legal career brings to the ticket?
Well, I think she's going to have to really make the case to show how she's evolved over time. And I think there's nothing that makes me crazier, and this is a really nonpartisan way, where they're like, oh, she or he changed their positions on this. And, you know, I would hope that we all sort of evolve our ideas over time. And that's something that you do. And, you know, she was known at the beginning. I think one of the early ones that she didn't prosecute for the death penalty when a police officer was killed. But she had come out in her campaign saying that she was opposed to the death penalty, and she kind of followed through on that. And then on the other hand, she...
And this was in 2004 and didn't pursue the death penalty against a man who murdered a San Francisco police officer. Is that right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
What was the impact of that? I mean, how did police unions look at her after that?
Yeah, I think they were really angry. And I think a lot of people, even some Democrats, not all of them certainly, but kind of felt that that was not something that she should have pursued. And then on the other hand, when she was Attorney General of California, there were a number of cases where when there were police shootings, she didn't go after the police officers and try to overturn that qualified immunity. And so I think on the other side, she's got hits from that. So I think there's sort of arguments on both sides about her career, both as a prosecutor in San Francisco and then also as Attorney General of California.
Yeah, I mean, how does that look in the context of the Black Lives Matter movement and the protests we're seeing across the country? How might that history and context affect her and the ticket?
Yeah, it's certainly going to be brought up. And I think, you know, if you are a Republican strategist, you're going to really, really hit on that to make that point. That just sort of, you know, in a rational campaigning sense is what's going to happen. I think there also is a record of her incrementally starting in 2014 after Ferguson, that in California, she starts to try to go after the police a little bit more and talks about making more changes. And so what I think the message that she's got to show and is that over time, she's really tried to make these changes and has evolved in her own thinking, as has the party in general. There is going to be some criticism that she hasn't gone far enough and that those incremental changes that they're going to argue maybe should have gone faster. And she's really going to have to address that and talk about that evolution and where she is now and just kind of hammer that point of where those policies and Joe Biden, too, right, of where how his policies, particularly after the 1994 crime bill. And he's talked a lot about his own kind of evolution. And I think they are going to have to hit at that hard against criticism that will come both from Republicans and from the more liberal wing of the Democratic Party.
We're talking with Wendy Scattergood, an assistant professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. We're getting her analysis on U.S. Senator Kamala Harris joining the Biden ticket and taking your thoughts as well. Do you think Kamala Harris will draw in younger voters or people of color to the Democratic Party? Do you think Harris would make a capable president if she had to step into that role? What do you think of her track record so far and as a senator of California? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Wendy, the news had been so anticipated, Biden was going to make this announcement. And so here we are. But how have Republicans reacted to Biden's VP pick so far? What have you heard?
Well, I think coming directly from the campaign, there was immediately emails being shunted out to their lists. A lot of same things we've been hearing. They call her nasty. They call her phony, a socialist, a radical, that she's soft on crime, that she's going to cause chaos and the downfall of which is. It's not that new, but I think it really, really ramped up in terms of their social media. They're starting to, after kind of a two-week hiatus in some of the swing states, including Wisconsin, are starting to run ads now. A lot of law and order and economy stuff. But at the same time, I think they're saying, oh, she's soft on crime, and they're trying to hit at some of these other things. Well, she was too hard on some of these other things. And so I think some of the pundits are talking about them, that they're kind of all over the place on them. But I think when you actually look at the emails that are coming from the Pence Trump official campaign sites, they're pretty consistent in terms of the words that they're using.
And that consistency you see makes a difference?
Yeah, I think so, because what we know just sort of from psychology is the more that you hear something, the more that you sort of, even if at the beginning you think that, wow, that's completely can't be true, but the more it's repeated, the more you hear it. And these kinds of very short fear tactics, we know our brains are set up to kind of focus on negative more than positive because threats are bad. And so I think that consistency, particularly with their base, can be effective.
You mentioned campaign ads. What can Harris bring to the ticket as far as fundraising ability?
Yeah, well, I think she's got a national network already set up, and I think that's one of the benefits of presidential nominees picking from among the people who ran in the primaries. And that's pretty common for both parties, is to pick someone who's already sort of set up for that. She's got a lot of social network and online kind of savvy. She's got some pretty avid fans. The hashtag
K-Hive. Is that K-Hive?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and, you know, it's what they sort of call this the stan culture, and that is, you know, really committed fan bases. You know, earlier in the year with the Tulsa Republican meeting that they were talking about, maybe the K-pop fans of kind of snagging up some of those tickets to make it look like they weren't there. And, you know, so that kind of culture is that if she can really ramp up K-Hive, not only to raise money, but as activists, and so that if there is sort of rumors coming out there or to counteract some of these Republican attacks, I mean, she can really mobilize K-Hive to get out and counter that message.
St. Norbert College political scientist Wendy Scattergood is our guide to Election 2020 and the Biden-Harris ticket. What do you think about Biden's pick of Kamala Harris? Does Harris on the Democratic ticket sway you in any way? We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about Joe Biden choosing Kamala Harris as his running mate. Here is Harris at the podium in Delaware last night, their first campaign event together.
Joe likes to say that character is on the ballot, and it's true. When he saw what happened in Charlottesville 3 years ago today, he knew we were in a battle for the soul of our nation. And together with your help, that's a battle we will win.
What do you make of the Harris pick for Biden's running mate? Do you think she would make a capable president if she were to step into that role? How would you assess her political strengths and weaknesses? We're at 800-642-1234. St. Norbert College political scientist Wendy Scattergood stays with us. So, Wendy, you were talking about how Harris could mobilize her base at times when things may be when she's trying to help control the message. And one of those messages that has already started to go out is where she was born, and that there is this, you know, the Twitter movement of her being foreign born, which isn't true. She was born in Oakland. So what do you make of that and citizenship?
Yeah, I think this goes back to the birther movement with Barack Obama, and it's not surprising there was even some talk of, you know, Tammy Duckworth, that if she had been chosen, that would have become an issue because her mother is Thai, and she lived for a time in Thailand and Indonesia, and there was talk about maybe that was a reason just to kind of avoid some of those birther things. It's not really surprising. I mean, I teach a course on conspiracy theories, and, you know, we really are in an era where they've increased massively at this point. We know that there are a number of Republican primary winners who are believers in QAnon. And so it's not really that surprising that we're seeing sort of another birther movement, in particular because Joe Biden is if elected, he would be the oldest president ever elected, and that he's, you know, there's sort of the assumption that he's would be a one-term president, and that you know, that makes Kamala sort of the heir apparent to the Democratic Party in 2024. And so it's not really surprising that they're kind of starting those conspiracy theories again.
Well, yeah. Can you explain some of the conspiracy theories that you see taking hold as we approach November and in particular QAnon?
Yeah, I think, you know, so QAnon is, a lot of it's pretty vague, but in general, it's kind of looking at Trump being the savior and weeding out some of the people that are within the federal bureaucracy that they claim are trying to sort of take over the country. So I think that will come in, particularly at the election results. I think there will be a lot of conspiracy theories about how the votes are counted. We know that even in 2016, the California vote was late in coming in because they were still counting thousands and thousands of votes, even though the actual Electoral College outcome wasn't really in doubt at that point. And I think we're going to see a lot of conspiracy theories come out toward October and November about different groups trying to subvert the election.
We're talking with Wendy Scattergood, assistant professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. We're looking at U.S. Senator Kamala Harris being named the running mate of presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden. Taking your thoughts as well, 800-642-1234. Wendy, the VP debate is set for University of Utah on October 7th. It'll run for 90 minutes without commercials. What are you anticipating?
Well, my first thought was, you know, sports is not going to look like it normally looks. Big Ten, Pac-12 are not going to have football. And so I think it's because people are going to really want to watch it. as Maya Rudolph said when she found out about Kamala Harris, she said, spicy. And I think that may be a good word to describe how we might anticipate that debate going. So,
because there won't be other maybe sports, controlling our viewing habits at that time, or we won't be shuttling kids out to practice. It may be more center stage.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. We love our sports, and you know, to some extent, debates are about trying to get information about the candidates, but there also is that sort of, you know, sport aspect to it of like car racing and wondering when the crashes are going to happen.
And there's already some speculation as to how she would go up against Vice President Mike Pence. What might be their interactions in a debate?
Yeah, well, I mean, one thing is they both are very media savvy. We watched Kamala do well in the primaries, and she got those early big bumps in her favorability ratings after those early debates. But Mike Pence has had a radio show in the 90s and has been governor, so he has a lot of experience. He's not going to kind of back down, or, you know, I don't really expect him to make any big flubs or anything. He may be not as combative as Harris, but it'll be interesting to see how he kind of rises, because we would expect her, and that's kind of what Vice President in the debate between the Veeps, that's kind of what we expect, is the idea is they're the ones that are the attack dogs, so that the presidential campaigns could, in theory, kind of stay more above the fray, kind of act more presidential and diplomatic, but then
take the high ground.
Yeah, and the Veeps get in there and kind of dig in and do that kind of work. So I would expect it to, be spicy.
Let's take a call now. Frederick is joining us. Oh, I'm sorry. Frederick from Duluth is not there. You know, one of the things, Wendy, when you look at age, if elected, Joe Biden will be the oldest first-term president ever. How does Biden's age factor into picking Harris, if at all, as his running mate?
I think it was a factor. I mean, he's talked very openly about his age. He's talked about himself being the transition candidate for the Democratic Party. And so I think that was a huge consideration for him when he was thinking about who he was going to pick, is someone with enough experience. I think his number one thing was qualification and someone he feel like he could really be a partner in governing with, but at the same time, who could really take the Democratic Party into the future.
A lot of the pandemic has really shifted how campaigns approach events, how they gather people. How do you think that this ticket will be campaigning heading into November?
Yeah, I think social media is going to be huge. And I think that's where having that network, as we talked about before, that Harris brings to the table, is going to be really important, because they aren't going to be able to get out there as much. We're not going to be seeing them in public. There's been jokes about, like, oh man, we're not going to see the candidates eating all the good food. So, which is something that really humanizes and adds weight to, but definitely humanizes the candidates. And I think that's going to be a real challenge, is to you aren't going to see them kind of talking one-on-one. And what's really important about the candidates is not just them getting our message out to us, but you hear in all the memoirs, you hear the presidential candidates talk about how much they love being out on the campaign trail all over the country and meeting people and hearing their stories.
That's where stories come from.
Exactly. So I think that kind of two-way street part of it, as someone who's just sort of pro-democracy, I'm really saddened by that, because I really see that part of the campaigning of really hearing from people all over the country and hearing their stories. Mm-hmm. We've seen how much that influences presidential and vice presidential candidates, and I'm saddened by that. I hope that there's a way to sort of overcome that.
Well, Wendy, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Wendy Scattergood is an assistant professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Quick note, earlier in the program today, we were talking architecture and Frank Lloyd Wright's Taliesin in Spring Green. And after the conversation, a representative shared that Taliesin is actually open for tours. Open for tours on Thursdays through Tuesdays. It's closed on Wednesdays. Just ahead, we'll talk with an official from a crisis assistance group in Oregon to find out how the program works and how it got started. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.